Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Thursday. Sam Smith at the bottom of this hour. Bulls.com. A lot of you, and I mean a lot of you, watch The Last Dance. Episodes 1 and 2. This past Sunday night, well, episodes 3 and 4 will be again this Sunday night, and a guy who was featured a lot in The Last Dance is Sam Smith, and we will talk to him at the bottom of the hour. We are excited about that. At 1 o'clock, our weekly chat with Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. There were some things coming out in the hockey world that we talked about yesterday with Chris Mason. Neutral site idea is dead, and they may be exploring opportunities for current locations, current NHL cities, as a possible alternative to getting things cranked back up. But we'll get into all that and more with Elliot Friedman.
Real quick at
1 o'clock.
Real quick, I watched last night and I texted you guys on NBC Sports Network. They showed the gold medal game with the Dream Team, and I ended up watching pretty much the whole thing because I was young when it actually happened. But that was a lot of fun seeing, you know, Magic and Jordan and Pippen and Charles Barkley, Christian Leitner.
Was it fun, though? They dominated.
They did. They did.
It was
but
really
it was
boring,
still cool.
Actually.
I mean, it was a...
It was cool, but it was men amongst boys is what it felt like.
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, what was their closest game?
Yeah, and at the time, I didn't watch too many of those games at the time because of that. It, you know, maybe I just didn't appreciate the historical purposes for it, just that collection of talent on the court. But the games weren't competitive, so I watched maybe a piece here or there of a game, but it didn't really capture me.
They beat their opponents by an average of 44 points.
Yeah. I was going to say, they never had a game, did they?
I mean, Croatia made it interesting in the first half, and then they pulled away in the second. So
yeah. Won by 49?
I don't even remember now, but it was fun.
I mean, it was cool, but it was just, like I said, it was kind of a joke. It was like, okay, yeah. World, nice try.
Chuck
you got
Daly.
No chance.
Easy job for Chuck Daly.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So tonight, NFL draft, round one, and you can hear all the action throughout the draft starting tonight here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and 94.9. All of our coverage is going to be presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. So we've been talking about that a lot today. Cameron Wolf joined us at 11 o'clock. We went down to Miami, found out what's the mindset of the Dolphins with 3 first-round picks. We talked to Rocky Boyman, former Titans linebacker who does radio in Cincinnati now, and he says it's a done deal, just like we found out last year. A year ago today, we went to Arizona, and whoever, I don't remember who we talked to, said it's a done deal. It's over. They're taking Kyler Murray. He said the same about Joe Burrow. So no, I don't think there's going to be really any intrigue with the first 3 picks. I think everybody feels like the first 3 picks, unless there's a trade up, is going
to
play out.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
I don't
because
know.
Because those 3, the 2 kids from Ohio State and Joe Burrow, are the first 3 picks in the draft, unless there's a trade up to get Tua.
Yeah, I think there really could be.
That's what our man Mel Kiper says.
I don't really put a lot of stock into Mel Kiper. I mean, I don't really follow what he's saying. Nah. Not really.
I look at, like, I have Daniel Jeremiah's draft pulled up, and I really like him.
Mm-hmm.
I like what he, and he has Burrow, Young, and Okuda. Tristan Wirfs, the offensive tackle from Iowa, going to the Giants, and then Herbert, 5th overall to Miami, Tua, 6th overall to the Chargers. Now, I disagree. I think Miami goes Tua. I'm going to stand by that, but I do. I respect him and like his mocks more than the Mel.
Mel's got Derek Brown, defensive tackle from Auburn, going 3rd to the Lions after Burrow and Young.
Yeah, just don't believe that. Don't believe that. Not signing up for that.
Yeah.
Here's another one from Mel that I thought was very, very puzzling here. He has the Raiders at 19 going with Jordan Love, a quarterback from Utah State, even though they still have Carr and they signed Marcus Mariota. So how does that work?
Yeah. Once again, I don't really follow what – I mean, I respect he's done it for a long time, and that's fine. I don't have anything against him. I just don't really follow what he says. I mean, he's been, you know, when I think of the draft and projections, I just don't think of Mel Kiper. I mean, I know that he is one of the draft guys, but when I think of guys that have nailed the draft, and it's hard, but I've just never considered him one of those guys that, man, they were all over it with those picks. Not one of them.
Do you guys think during our mock this morning that Jordan Love went in the first round?
Probably.
Because he did. Marquise took him 24th overall to New Orleans.
Did Teron tell him to do that?
Marquise?
See Jordan Love going in several mock drafts in the first round.
No.
I've got CBS pulled up here. They've got him going to the Patriots.
Yeah, see, I thought he was going to the Patriots. So, I mean, he was right there for the taking. So I took him. They don't have that many needs. So I just went backup quarterback.
Yeah, Ryan went. Ryan had New England at 23 and went Patrick Queen from LSU. So he went linebacker. I was a little surprised by that too. I thought he might take a chance on Love. Which apparently
I'm seeing a lot of action. Guys on the third pick. It's not all. I see some of what you're saying, Darren, the back-to-back Buckeyes, you know, Chase Young going second. Almost everybody has Chase Young going second. But I see a lot of variety of trades and possibilities at three besides Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State. I do wonder if something will happen there.
That's the prime
if Detroit
spot.
Is the pick, it's Okuda. If somebody trades up, then I get it, but Okuda is going three.
Don't you think – now, you obviously don't know what New York's going to do, but don't you think that if Miami trades up to three and Detroit ends up just – you know, they just move back to five with everything else that they're going to get, Okuda would still be there at five
possibly.
If I had to guess.
I don't know. I don't know if that changes things for the Giants.
They could, but I mean, I don't know. I think that in, you know, any trade's going to be a gamble, but I think if you're Detroit and you have the opportunity to get a lot of equity.
When I talked to my scout friends this past season, and we talked about Ohio State, there were two guys that they brought up, and that were always brought up, and it was just like they're at a different level than everybody else, and it was Chase Young and Okuda. Same thing. Like these.
Do you
think
the Lions could trade down? Could they trade down to five and still get Okuda? I see a few mock drafts where that's happening.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Maybe the Dolphins feel like they've got to move up. So you're saying, but I think Darren, you're saying that Okuda is such a special guy, but the Lions might be able to slide down a notch or two and still get him.
Well, if the Giants are just hell-bent on getting their franchise quarterback that everybody laughed at when they drafted him here in Nashville, you know, tons of protection and every possible, you know, reason to succeed in trying to prove the NFL world and all the fan bases that Daniel Jones was the right pick at six, then maybe they're taking an offensive lineman no matter what. But if Okuda is there, then maybe
that's what it looks like in most of the draft I'm seeing.
Yeah, and they'd probably go with Wirfs.
See, I think
or
that,
Wills.
It looks like all the drafts that I see, Wirfs or whatever, they're taking Wirfs or Willis with the fourth pick.
Yeah, usually whenever you have a quarterback, as we saw here, we've seen here, and it happens in every market where you're trying everything possible. Like nobody really believes that your guy is the guy. And so you're trying to prove everybody wrong, and so what do? You just build up everything around them to try to give them every possible way to succeed. And so if that's the case, then, you know, you're going to be looking at a tackle if you're the Giants, to help protect your franchise quarterback that you're trying to convince everybody was the right pick. And by the way, what do you guys think? Is he?
We've
is
also
he
got the running back too.
The right, 5 years from now, what are we saying about Daniel Jones? 5 years from now?
Oh, I don't know. I don't have an answer.
No
for that.
Idea. No idea.
I'm not trying to get out of the question.
He did enough. He flashed enough to give you hope.
Yeah, but it's the rest of the team. I mean, it's just are they gonna be able to build that back, and you know what do they have with the coach? And you know, I didn't necessarily think that moving on from Shurmur was the right move. That's just my personal opinion. But I don't know. I don't know what the rest of the team looks like. I think Daniel Jones looked a lot better than people thought he was going to. But I need to see what he has around him.
He looked better as in what? I mean, what did he do that he looked better? I mean,
well, I thought it was a major reach of where they took him, and then with just the small sample size that I saw, I was like, okay, I think with the right development, this kid probably could make it in the NFL. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that, you know, he's Jay Cutler, or can he be a franchise quarterback? I don't know, but it looked like he could last. It's just I need to see the pieces that he's going to have, you know, the weapons he's going to have to throw to. I mean, that's the big thing for me. And I like Shurmur developing him.
What we also haven't seen, too, is let's see how Jones quarterbacks when the team is in somewhat of contention.
Right.
It's one thing to quarterback when your team's out of it in games that aren't
exactly
really that meaningful and you do okay here and there. But I want to see when Barkley's healthy, when he's healthy, start of a season, expectations starting to raise a little bit, how he handles the fire of the New York media when, you know, when it's time to win, right? There's only so long they're going to tolerate, you know, some bad teams there. And so I don't think we really know yet, but at least he has gone out there, and there have been some games where he's done some things, right? That game down in Tampa, the crazy win, he at least showed that he could do it. There are some of these quarterbacks drafted in the first round that never even have a moment like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you something that really jumped out at me his rookie year is his fumbles. He better get that fixed. I think he led the league in fumbles. Too many fumbles. He's getting the ball stripped a ton. He better figure out a way to get past that, because it doesn't get any easier. Once there's more tape on you, once there's more, everybody's figured out all your tendencies, you're going to have to be even better. I mean, he fumbled the ball way too much last season. Way too much. That is going to be a real hindrance if he can't get that fixed. Usually we're talking about interceptions with a rookie quarterback. In this case, it was, to me, the more glaring weakness was his ability to protect the football.
Right. Well,
I'm trying to find how many fumbles he had, Darren. I'm looking at some stats. I haven't found it.
I think he led the league. I'm pretty sure. Look that up. He had major problem holding on to the football. And we were just talking with somebody this week about how impressive they were with stripping the ball. Who were we talking about? And they were just talking about how impressive on the defensive side of the ball, how good they were at forcing fumbles. But these guys at this level, I mean, that's what they do, right? And
I'm not sure if I've got this right, Darren. I don't know what they count on. I'm not looking at the full thing. I'm looking at him as these may be only on carries where he was deemed a runner and not just being sacked or stripped while trying to pass. But he had four fumbles according to the rushing stats.
Yeah, I was going to say, he had way more than four fumbles. I mean, he had four fumbles in like three games.
Yeah, he had 18 total. Now he recovered
18.
Three.
18. That is a ton.
That's a lot of fumbles.
That is a didn't even start all season.
Yeah. And
18 fumbles.
He had more fumbles than he did interceptions.
Whew. Yeah, that's a problem.
12 interceptions.
Holy moly. Yeah. So you know they'll be working on that for sure.
But 24 touchdown passes. He did do some pretty good things too.
Yeah, threw for over 3,000 yards. Yeah, there was some good. There was some good that came out of it. All right,
I think you guys bring up a good point, though. Can he do that when they're in contention?
Right, and when and by the way, as we've talked about, it's not about flashes. Look, if you get drafted sixth overall and you don't have any flashes, you're just a flat-out bust. Like, you better have flashes. It's not about flashes. It's about can he get settled in, and as they learn more about you, can you keep getting better, right? That's what we always talk about. The league gets better. They figure you out, and can you keep getting better, and can you sidestep them figuring you out, right?
Yeah.
So once he's settled in and the book is out on him, then what does he look like? Once everybody's figured out who you are, then how the great ones, the good ones, they get past all that, right? That's how they last, because even if the book is out on them, even if you know what they're doing, there's nothing you're going to do about it, right? That's the great ones and the really, really good ones. So the question is, can Daniel Jones do that? Flashes is hell, everybody should have flashes, especially when you're drafted that high in your first year. But I think it's going to take a lot more than flashes to stick around in the league. So we'll see going into year two. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Was reading the Syracuse.
Great song.
Yep. No doubt. Should get you excited.
The Daz Band. That's an early 80s special right there.
Cutting Edge.
Oh, Cutting Edge. No question. Nice job, Marquise. Yeah. Well done.
I was just reading where in the last 15, 20 minutes that ESPN.com put out that Syracuse's AD says the ACC has had no conversations about canceling this upcoming college football season amid the coronavirus pandemic. They were speaking on a Zoom teleconference about the state of his athletic department and the fate of fall sports schedule. He said, and this was today, that we want to play. We have not, as a conference, had any discussions in terms of not playing. We want to play. We plan to play. What we don't know is when we're going to start and what form or what format we're going to start. Do you play with fans? Do you not play with fans? So much is unknown. But the ADs and the conference office, we meet twice a week, and there's not been one second of a conversation about not having football season in some way, shape, or form. That coming from Syracuse's AD.
All right.
It goes on.
On one hand, I can see it from one angle, and that would be, anything you talk about right now is, you don't know, right? So you can talk all you want. You can go through all the scenarios, but the bottom line is you're not going to know very many answers. So if you want to put it off for another month and thinking that at that point you might know more, then that can make some sense. But they better be ready to talk about it. That's what I would say.
Yep. I guess it's going to be weird. Or they're going to be in a weird spot. And I realize their dynamic is a little bit different than, professionals, right? People that are getting paid for their sport or their craft. Because it's going to put them in an awkward spot if the NFL is playing, right? PGA's got their tour going on. Major League Baseball's going on. NHL and NBA is doing something, whether this season happens or not, but they're starting up a new season. All this stuff, MLS is going, if all this stuff is going on around them, and it may be a different look, maybe there's no fans or what have you, but they're playing, isn't it going to be odd if college football comes out and says, yeah, I think we're going to need to wait till the spring? Like, what is the, you know, what is the pushback or what's the feedback from college football fans and big donors to their schools if that is the case? Isn't that going to be a little odd? It's like, yeah, everybody else is going to play, but well, I think we're going to wait.
Oh, yeah. I think
like, how do you sell that?
I don't know. I mean, you would get a lot of pushback and, you know, they could come out and use the excuse of, well, listen, you know, we said this, we're trying to tell you guys that if nobody's on campus, if the kids aren't, and we're doing everything remotely, I mean, we can't have sports. yeah, I don't think anybody's going to buy that. Everybody's going to be like, well, everybody else has figured it out, so what's wrong with you?
Right, now, and what kind of saying. How do, what they, kind of pushback, how do they sell that?
Well, and it's not just the fans, too. I mean, what kind of pushback do they get from media partners? Do you think ESPN is going to be like, yeah, sure, we respect your decision, or is it going to be like, the NFL's playing without fans, the NBA's playing without fans, the NHL's back. What, I mean, you guys can't figure this out?
Yeah, I don't see that. I just think that is going to be a hard, hard sell. I mean, they're going to get ripped. And like I said, I understand it's a different dynamic because their narrative is going to be, we can't possibly have these kids playing the sport, but yet nobody's on campus. You know, if all of our classes are online, we can't possibly have these kids out there playing. Like, I know that'll be their story, but once again, like, how do you sell that? How do you sell that to big donors? How do you sell that to a fan base? How do you sell that to the networks of, yeah, I know everybody else is doing their thing, but we're going to sit and wait. That, to me,
it's tough. I tell you, I've read so many articles on, I've tried to balance, you know, the sports angle for college by also just seeing what some of the schools have put out there. And it's just as murky for those. All the different schools are going to be in way different positions depending on where they are in the country. It's such a hard puzzle to try to put together when you're trying to balance the two. What's happening on the campus, and how do you balance that with the athletes on your campus? And then you take all those athletes in a conference, right, where the 12 or 14 schools or 16 schools in your conference might be all on different pages of what they're doing with their students.
Yep. Congratulations to the Cincinnati Bengals. They just selected David Pollack with the 17th pick in the 2005 draft. When we come back, Sam Smith has been covering the Bulls for a long time. The Last Dance. Man, episodes 1 and 2 got everybody's attention. Episodes 3 and 4 will be Sunday night. He is featured in this pretty heavily. We'll talk to him next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, we certainly talked about it a lot on Monday's show. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2 were this past Sunday night. Episodes 3 and 4 will be this Sunday night. And a guy who was featured a lot in that was Sam Smith. He's been covering the Bulls for a long time, now with Bulls.com. And he is on the line with us. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
How are things in Chicago? I know it's been rough there as well. Is everybody staying safe?
Big cities are not the greatest place to be, although I'm out in the suburbs. One advantage we have is that our weather this time of year is usually so miserable, nobody wants to go out anyway. So we're viewing that as one of the rare positives of spring, usually not arriving till June.
Do you, episodes 1 and 2, did you view that as a positive? How did you think it was done? Obviously, it was well-received. They had great ratings. But what did you think of what we've seen to this point?
Well, that's usually the test. You know, people tuned in, and I think the reaction was they're anxious to see more. So, you know, I think ESPN's doing a great job with it. Obviously, the timing helps. People are, don't have any live sports to follow. And here's something different and something new rather than, watching more reruns of the 2004 World Series or something. It's interesting to me in the sense, my view is different because I was there for all of it and sort of lived it, covering the Bulls and the NBA all through the 80s and 90s and, Jordan's coming, Jordan's going, all the dramas of his retirements, his returns, and what each day was bigger than the next. But I think they got the basic theme of it right. I think because they have to make it a dramatic story in some sense, and there were dramatic elements to it, at least in a sports sense. Is there's always an element of like all the things you see on TV, the great stories based on a true story. So. Yeah, I happen to personally, believe there were behind the scenes sort of elements that Phil and Michael realize this thing really didn't have any legs, and it, to get through the 97-98 season was going to be extraordinary. You know, much like Michael, I think he was looking back to 92-93, the third year of their first three-peat, and how exhausted he was and how burned out and how anxious he was to leave. And now at his age, and now the age of the other players and the erratic behavior of Rodman, you know, who the previous season had missed, I don't know, 25 or 30 games with suspensions and injuries. I think in that playoff series in 97, I think he got a technical in every game.
So, wow.
You know, Michael was looking like, you know, this guy could implode any day. So I think they latched on to that Last Dance thing as, you know, at least Michael's standpoint, a great motivational ploy. Wow, yeah, they're trying to get rid of us. I'll show them, you know, one of those. He always built up some sort of enemy to attack, you know, be it the Pistons, you know, or Jeff Van Gundy's lack of respect, whatever it was. And I think that was a great, you know, so they had played it. They played it in the theme that, oh, no matter what happens, there's no way they come back. And I kind of believe they weren't coming back anyway, but makes for a great story.
No doubt. If Jerry Krause was with us here today, what do you think, how do you think he would have felt about the way he was depicted in episodes 1 and 2?
Just how he felt every day the way he was depicted. I mean, they showed the ring ceremony in 1997, and you know, the players coming out and Krause coming out. So this is, you know, like I said, this is the fifth title in the midst of this great dynasty, and he was booed in the United States, you know, walking out onto the floor, and you saw that sort of embarrassed, half-hearted wave. So, you know, Jerry had and Michael, you know, obviously Michael and Scotty contributed greatly to that, although, you know, Jerry never helped himself. I think as Steve Kerr, you know, mentioned in the quote they used, that couldn't get out of his own way all the time. And so, you know, it's unfortunate someone has died. I'm sure he would have, in the current, would have been furious and fuming again about the depiction of what, and what the reason he became, you know, the antagonist figure, because he, you know, he was at odds with those guys so much, rather than sitting back and just enjoying the fame of what his team was achieving. But that's what you see, you know, the sort of like, I think the old Kennedy line, you know, victory has 1,000 fathers and, you know, defeat is an orphan. When you have success, be it any field, I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of people jumping to get in front of the spotlight. And that spotlight around Michael Jordan is pretty big. And he was not that comfortable with Jerry Krause's presence in a lot of occasions.
Sam, what would it have been like today? I mean, we laughed about it on Monday's show of, you know, Tony Romo got crushed for going to Cabo on a week off when they had a bye week in the playoffs. And, you know, some of the things that have come up in today's landscape of social media. To know that Michael Jordan and Danny Ainge played golf in between games 1 and 2 of the playoffs with a member of the media, could you imagine today if something like that got out, what kind of story it would be?
Well, I'll give you a better one than that, what Michael did on the first championship. I'm interested to see if they show that. But he, the team was going to the White House, and he blew up the trip. He said, I've seen presidents before. That's no big deal. And then he said, that was George Bush 1. And not only didn't he go, then he said he had a family vacation. And this was before the season, and they, you know, were doing it because they had split up so much so quickly after the end of the previous season, and then didn't want to do it during the season. And then said he had a family vacation planned, and your family always trumps the president. And it turned out he had gone on the gambling weekend with a guy. He didn't know that, but it turned out to be a convicted drug dealer. So,
oh, boy.
What if that had come out at the time on social media? So, different times. But the other part of it is, you know, much like they always said about President Reagan being a Teflon president, whatever things happened during, you know, everything sort of flowed. It was that way with Michael. He was such a beloved figure that people, and so popular and appealing. And while those things occurred at the time, and we knew about a lot of them, people would make an excuse and say, well, you know, that's okay. Michael, he deserves the right to do that and have some relaxation. So it was a much different, I wouldn't say much different time, but a much different view toward him, because he wasn't that sort of polarizing figure like a LeBron or Kobe or some of the players had become. And maybe because of the effect of social media, which I think is well taken out of proportion. You know, you read some 8 people making critical comments. So what? Who cares? So back then, you know, we never heard from them. I'm sure they were making the same comments, but fortunately they didn't have a public voice like they do now. So, but those kind of things in that era were not that unusual. And the one thing you couldn't, whatever Michael Jordan did, what transcended it all the time, was there was no way to accuse him of not being a great competitor. So you say, well, if he was playing golf with Danny Ainge, it probably was some sort of a plot to try to undermine Danny Ainge or steal Boston's plays. You know, it wasn't about he was going to give in to the Celtics because, you know, he wasn't committed and he was being wooed by Danny Ainge somehow. So with Michael, nobody worried about he wasn't going to be ready for the next game.
We're talking to Sam Smith, longtime Chicago sports writer, and covered the Bulls all those years, wrote 2 books on those teams. And you can see him throughout this documentary that we were so enthralled in the first 2 parts. So, Sam, how did you prepare yourself, you know, in all of these articles you've written over such a long period of time, and now we're, you know, a good ways removed from that time. How did you get ready for the interviews that they did with you? I just find that fascinating because I love the storytelling element to this.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, maybe I shouldn't sort of admit that, but it's like your family. You know, you can tell stories off the top of your head about things that happened when you were growing up or whatever. And so, you know, for all these years, I was essentially embedded with this team, for good or bad. Literally, the first week Jordan was in Chicago, I was with the Chicago Tribune for almost 30 years. And, you know, went to his apartment to spend an afternoon with him to do a feature story, and was at his first games, and, you know, his first, when he quit, every one of the games, his last game in D.C. in 2003 when he was, in Philly when he was with the Wizards, that was his last game. And, had so many years traveling, especially, you know, in the 80s when the team didn't have private planes and we all traveled together and we were up, you know, for the 5 a.m. wake-ups to get to the airport at 6 to get that first flight out so you wouldn't be late for the next game. And so it for better or worse, it was an intimate part, of my work professional experience. The other part of those, I've done a few of those, and you always try to help other journalists because, you know, your job is to bother people, basically, you know, ask them questions. So, you know, if somebody wants to ask you something, you have an obligation. But, you know, and I think Rodman, the Rodman documentary I was in, and a couple others over the years. But what I always found on those was, you know, you sit with them for like 2 or 3 hours, and then they use about like 7 seconds of, you know, of
right.
Tape. So I really never pay much attention when I go in. I just sit down figuring, well, you know, we'll just talk for a while and they won't use anything. So I just really do those things casually. But having been around them so long, and like you said, I wrote 3 books. Jordan Rules, you know, was the most famous one. But I sort of went back again 5-6 years ago, and I did sort of a narrative oral history of Jordan's career, quoting, you know, all his top competitors who played against him, guys I knew well, and, you know, Bird and Magic and Isaiah, and President Obama as well, being in Chicago, and he consented to talk about it. And executives, Popovich, coaches, and so it was a sort of a combination. So I sort of reviewed, and that was called There Is No Next. And the point I was trying to make with the title is I kept hearing, it's Kevin Durant, he's next, and then LeBron, of course, and Kobe. And I said, no, there is no next. You know, there may be other guys come along and who better basketball players or have, you know, more records. LeBron may end up with the most points in NBA history. But there's nobody's going to surpass what this guy meant to society and his impact and, you know, the shoes and the shaved head, wearing the earrings, and I think you can see that in the fact that he's worthy enough for a plot, you know, a classic plot for a 10-part documentary.
Yeah.
So, so anyway, my familiarity with the topic is, has just become because, it's like Zelig. You know, I just happened to be there when a lot of famous things were happening. It wasn't about me, but I just was standing there.
It's all second nature. It's all easy recall for you. So, Sam, parts 3 and 4 we're looking forward to, and this falls right into that first book that you wrote, The Jordan Rules, and we can always remember that phrase. So, take me back to that time when you first put that out there. You're at the beginning of the three-peat for the Bulls. You followed them through that first championship season. The book comes out. How did that change your relationship with the team at all? When you come up with a book like that, there's so much detail, and I know it wasn't received perfectly by everybody. As you said, you're telling some stories that people maybe from afar would have no idea.
Well, it was received well by the team. It wasn't received that well by Michael, even though I think it was more that it became so controversial because his image at the time was built up, so perfectly and in a sense unfairly, because they were depicting him as this, they had the commercials where he flew up into the treehouse to deliver the kids Coke, and he had all the, main All-American, so-called All-American products, and, nice-looking guy, great smile, sort of perfect being. And, I know from behind the scenes, he's not a bad person, he's not immoral or committing crimes, but, he could be pretty difficult to live with. And so in those years leading up to the book, it was supposed to be just a sort of behind-the-scenes diary, of a team on the rise, but not one that necessarily anyone expected to win. And that was the truth back then, with the Pistons knocking him off every year, and people forget how good Portland was, and they had been in the finals and were the favorites that season. And even among the Bulls, no one ever was talking that season about winning the title. It was all about, can we ever beat the Pistons? And actually, they had a game earlier that season, the first game in Detroit. They got blown out, lost by like 20 or 25. Phil Jackson, I remember after the game, said that, this team might be done. We might have to break it up. Michael is lobbying for Pippen and Grant to be traded, doesn't think they're tough enough. So in the midst of all this, they end up winning the title. But, Jordan, in his frustration, as essentially came to a rebuilding team in 84, and, while Bird and Magic are winning, and he's elevating to this pantheon of NBA greats, he's not winning. So people are saying, well, and just imagine, like you say, what would be in this era if, say LeBron and Durant were winning and, somebody else was a spectacular player, say Westbrook, but his team kept getting knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, you'd say he's a loser. And so that's what they were saying about Jordan. And so he's growing frustrated. And, his manic competitiveness that we know about and have seen over the years would lash out in practice or with teammates, but also, he had this great wit about him, so he's able to verbally tackle teammates. And I remember guys over the years would get frustrated and would say to me, why don't you write this? And I said, well, glad to. Yeah, that'd be a great story. I'll quote you. No, you can't quote me on that. he said, but as when it came that I was going to write a book about it, there were a lot of players who said, well, you can't quote me for today, but you can quote me for a book, down the road, whatever. And so that's what I did. And so when it came out, there was a lot of criticism toward Jordan, and a criticism, but everywhere we'd go that season, I was still with the team. The first question, you know, one of the questions at the next press conference, whatever city we stop in, and everyone was only talking to Jordan always, was, well, you know, are you really a jerk? And so I don't, I doubt he ever read the book. I doubt he did. But, of course, you don't like being asked that. But now what evolved to with all the success and the championships was that this is what a leader is about. And you know, you don't make friends by being a leader. You push people to places maybe that they can't go themselves. And somehow, sometimes you have to do it, you know, with an edge. And so I think that's why Michael said, like a week ago in an interview he did with Good Morning America, that people see this and a lot of them are not going to like me. Well, of course, that's not true. It's going to be the opposite. But that's what he meant by that, I think. And that's what happened when the Jordan rules initially came out. And then what it evolved to is people said, well, yeah, he's got to do some of these things. He's not committing any crimes. But, you know, you got to be tough on some of your teammates because they're not as tough as you.
Fascinating stuff. Sam, really appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe there in Chicago, and we'll do it again down the road. We're all anxious for episodes 3 and 4. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Good to talk to you. Thanks.
All right. Same to you. Sam Smith, Bulls.com. Been covering him for a long time also. As you just heard, author of a couple of books on those teams. We'll come back and wrap up hour number 3 next. Elliot Friedman coming up from Sportsnet at 1 o'clock. Good stuff there from Sam Smith. As I think the first two episodes got, let's see, the first one got close to 6 million or just over 5.5 million viewers. And there was a little bit of a drop off in the second one. I think it was a little bit over 5 million viewers. I'll be curious to see what episodes 3 and 4 after the NFL draft, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, what that looks like on Sunday night. I'll be curious.
Yeah,
me too. Are they going to go up or go down? What do you think?
Can I say flat? I mean, I kind of feel like it could be just in the ballpark of where it was. I don't know if it goes down. But I don't know how much it would go up. But people are so starved right now. I mean, that's another way to look at it. People
sure.
are so starved.
Well, it's just great TV, though. It's a fantastic production. I would think it's not going to go down.
Yeah,
it'll
I don't
stay,
think it's going to go down.
Stay strong or go up.
If you're ESPN, you got to just feel great right now, because considering you haven't had anything to talk about, now you have that. You have the Jordan documentary plus the draft. I mean, this is going to be a good week for them.
How many people? I don't know what the answer to this and how you calculate it, but I know some people, anecdotally, that taped it and, you know, couldn't watch it live on that Sunday night, but have since watched it, and they're likely to be watching on this Sunday. So I don't know how you calculate that if you're ESPN, but there's got to be a large number of people that did that, right?
I have no idea who was busy.
I mean,
that's what
we do. Well, but I'm saying we have shows that all the time we watch whenever we want to watch, right?
Right,
we
in a
tape
normal,
them when
but
they're
it,
live,
right, in a normal
watch
climate.
Them whenever we're ready to watch them.
Yeah, but that's in a normal climate. We're not in a normal climate. I mean, I don't. I'm not so sure. I would say DVR numbers are down. People are recording less because
I'd love to know that data.
You're
right.
You got time.
Not
man.
For me. I mean, I'm recording a lot of stuff. I'm just watching whenever I'm ready to watch.
Huh. By the way, the Jacksonville Jaguars just selected Matt Jones from Arkansas with the 21st pick in the first round of the 2005 draft.
Ooh.
Yikes.
Ooh.
That did not work out.
So obviously I had the sound down. Did the and I have the TVs behind me in my office setup, unfortunately. I saw them showing, I did see a young Mike Vrabel, so Jim Wyatt was right. I did see Mike Vrabel. He was on a panel with Trent Green and I didn't see who the other one was, but Vrabel was in there. But then they showed the war room for the Dallas Cowboys. They take Marcus Spears, correct? Well,
they took DeMarcus Ware and Marcus Spears.
Oh, yes.
11th
see, this was
and 20th.
This
that was
a good
pretty
draft.
Good first round.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad for mm-hmm. Jera.
Yep.
And the tuna.
Yep. DeMarcus Ware and Marcus Spears were, I think, picks 11 and 20.
So did they sign Romo after this draft? Is that right?
He was undrafted.
Undrafted.
I know he was undrafted, but was it after this draft? Was it after 05?
Was he 05?
Or was it 06? Because they...
Tony Romo would have been... Well, he's, what, 40 years old, so that would have made him... No, he was earlier than that. He was more like He was 03.
First
year,
04.
Oh. 04. So this was the year before
okay.
this one.
But he hadn't Bledsoe was still the starter, I think.
No, I he was actually undrafted
in
03.
He didn't become the starter until 2006.
Okay. 03 was his first year, not 04.
Okay. Okay.
03.
So 2003.
He did not appear in a game in 03.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
If you were starting, if you were the starting quarterback undrafted in your rookie season, boy, how bad is that team?
Yeah, because I saw the Cowboys first time that I actually got to see the Cowboys play live.
In fact, he didn't throw a pass. He didn't throw a pass until 06.
That's what I thought. Because the first time I saw the Cowboys play live in my life was at, I guess, the Coliseum, is what it was. That was the game Albert had the stomp, but Bledsoe was starting for the Cowboys.
Have you guys seen the news on Todd McShay?
I have not.
Just tweeted out about 30 minutes ago. It's not a fake account. It's got the blue check mark, and it's got well over 600,000 Twitter followers. Sean Salisbury, by the way, doing some work right now, breaking down the draft on television. A good buddy down in Houston. Hey, everyone, I'm so sorry to tell you that I won't be working the NFL draft this year. I'm at home recovering from coronavirus.
Oh, wow.
And then he goes on to talk more. Meantime, I'll be watching. I hope you will be too. I also hope Wingo and crew will help me out and do their part to keep Kuiper in line. So Todd McShay will not be a part of the draft, recovering from coronavirus. So somebody that we know that – the listeners probably don't know, but he's been behind the scenes at ESPN and ESPN Radio for a long time. Jeff Martindale is also recovering from coronavirus. He was on a ventilator. He was in the hospital for a week and a half and on a ventilator. Jeff Martindale. And thank goodness the news is good that he is better, but it was really serious. It was really bad. Like I said, everybody out there listening, most people will not know who Jeff Martindale is, but a guy we've gotten to know really well over the years, and Jeff's a good guy, and he's been battling COVID-19, and like seriously. I mean, like I said, in a hospital and on a ventilator. So we're glad to hear that he has come out on the other side, but scary stuff. We'll come back. Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet to start up the final hour here on this Thursday of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.